Test, 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 test. Test, 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 test. Hey there. Fuck. It's been a while. Hey there, welcome to EXO. So it's been, I don't know, like a year and some since I put out an episode of this podcast. You know, I kind of put it in park. I did like 50 episodes of EXO. I'm like, you know what? I'm real proud of it. I think it's a real good show. But it's like, all right, that's cool. Let's move on to something else. Let's do some other things. So this is just, I guess, to alert you about one of the other things that I'm doing. So I've been doing a lot of writing. I wrote a book, a nonfiction book, about that video game, The Last of Us. And you can get that book for free at keithcourage.com. Just go fucking check it out. Assuming you're into video games. But the reason I just put it out for free is it was just kind of a test run. Like, I just wanted to write a lower pressure book to get into the habit and the pattern of writing every day, and to, you know, just hit that milestone of writing a whole book, which I did, and very instructive. I learned a lot by doing it. So now I'm moving on to the next phase. I'm gonna write a novel. I've been working on it for about a year. And I started doing an accompanying podcast called How to Write a Novel, where I just chronicle my adventures of writing a novel. And, you know, sometimes I'll just toss the podcast on YouTube and just see what happens. YouTube is kind of an interesting thing because you never know what's going to work and what isn't. I mean, most things don't do anything. You know, I'll just toss them on YouTube and they just sit there and nothing happens. But then sometimes, like the Patrice O'Neill episode of EXO, it's up to like 50,000 views. Tons of comments. Shut the fuck up. I hate little dogs. If you have a little dog, what the fuck is wrong with you? Why? This dog is yapping its fucking head off. My mom has a terrier that will eat your face. It will fight you till it dies. And it doesn't realize that we're in a nice society where we're not allowed to fight back. Because if I could crush its little stupid fucking head, I would. I hate that dog. Sorry, I'm getting off track. So yeah, the Patrice O'Neill XO. 50,000 views. Tons of comments. Tons of people found it. Just a nice little thing. Like, I'm really glad I put that on YouTube and just kind of forgot about it for a few years. And it just, like, when I look back, I'm like, holy fuck. That one took off. So in the case of the How to Write a Novel podcast, nothing took off like that, but one of my little breakout clips, it's got like 2,000 views or something, and somebody posted on that one, like, hey, aren't you the guy who used to do the XO podcast? I recognize your voice. I liked that podcast. And that was just a delightful little thing. I'm like, oh, cool. Somebody remembers XO. And so that made me realize maybe I should just put out a little episode just to point people in the direction of this other podcast. Just in case they're interested. Mainly, it is very much about the process of writing every day. My trials and tribulations, the things that I've learned. If you're not actively engaged in trying to become a writer, you probably won't care. It is really specific. Maybe you could apply some of this stuff to just generalized creative endeavors. But I don't know. I think really this is just for writers, probably. But just in case you're curious, I'll play a couple clips from that podcast. Where, like I said, most of it's quite utilitarian, quite down to earth, quite fucking nuts and bolts. Like, here's what you gotta do to establish the habit to write every day. And here's how to just kind of keep the chain going without overburdening yourself, without having the chain break. Just slow and steady. It's a very practical podcast. But every once in a while, I get off on some fucking fantastical rant. And I thought I'd play that clip. Just play a clip of, like, it's funny the stuff that comes to your mind when you're just talking to yourself. Especially about a topic that you've thought about a lot. And just some shit just fucking blah, just bursts forth that you're like, oh, geez. I guess that is what I think, but I didn't expect all that. But yeah, it's like a little 10-minute clip, but it goes from like the nature of writing to the nature of civilization and human life. It's quite a ride. But yeah, like I said, most of the podcast isn't really like that. There's this great quote that I think it's a Banksy quote, but I actually heard the wrestler Jeff Hardy say it. But it's, I know dozens of people who will die for their art, but surprisingly few who will learn how to draw. And I just love that quote. Because yeah, it's the nuts and bolts, it's the boring part that's really important. Not the big highfalutin part. But sometimes the highfalutin part is fun. In small doses. So we got a bit of that. And then I'll also play a little clip. Because the history of XO, another reason why I don't do this podcast really anymore, is it's kind of like, how can I edit a story and learn how to use music and timing and pacing to make people feel bad, you know? A real melancholy fucking podcast this was. But that's what I was into at the time, and in that spirit, I also found a clip where I talk about just how to find that classic thing of like, where do you get your ideas? What do you use for inspiration? And it's just a little clip about how if you really want to know what to write about, you really want to find what you care about and what you think's important, find whatever hurts. Find whatever idea hurts you. Find whatever idea hurts you to think about, you know? And mind that. That's what you use. So we'll play that too. So a big bombastic clip and a downbeat sad and blue clip as a little introduction to my current podcast, How to Write a Novel. If you are interested, you can find it on iTunes by searching How to Write a Novel. And of course, it's on keithcourage.com, where all my stuff is. And if you're a writerly person, maybe it'll be handy for you. So yeah, thanks for listening. Thanks for all the XO support. It was definitely my most successful podcast, hands down. And without further ado, here are some clips from the How to Write a Novel podcast by Keith McNally. Thank you for listening.
Wait into the water. Step into the beauty of the sun. Remember why you came here.
And yeah, it's such a shame that there are so few positive examples to follow in life, in all walks. That's another thing I've often felt like ever since I was a kid, and I'd just be like, oh, I wish that, like, I had positive examples to follow. Instead, I have, like, reverse examples of, like, I can see how I would like to be and how I hope to become by looking at people and going, well, okay, I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be like that person. And after a while, you just accept that that's how it is. That's how it's going to be, and that's all right. You can gain a lot from negative examples. If that's all you got, then that's all you got. It's still up to you to be the light that you wish to see in the world. But there's this, I don't know, I guess it's one of these things too of just like, oh, don't be so negative. Don't be so negative all the time. And when it comes to like movie reviewing or just, I mean, I'm just talking about storytelling in general, writing in general. Movies are an easy go-to because they are the most popular, the most easily digestible, the most often discussed. But I really do think, to just put it simply, everything is garbage. Everything is so bad. It is so rare for me to see something that I like. And you'll get people that say, like, well, don't be like that. Why do you want to be like that? Why do you want to be so negative? Why do you want to be so down on everything? And I don't want to be. Are you kidding? I cannot bring it up. You know, as I get older, I just more and more, I just don't bother watching movies and I just don't bring it up. But I don't see the value in lying about it. You know, if you really do feel like all this shit is just trash and it's just not worth the time and no one is putting their back into it and there's no deeper resonance to these things and there's no nourishment to be gleaned from them and there's just no point to this shit, Don't pretend that there is just so people around you will feel more comfortable. Fuck them. Fuck them. These shitty movie watching fucks. What's so scary about admitting how things are, you know? All right, so what if? What if movies are bad? What if video game writing is bad? What if novels are bad? What if TV shows are bad? What if 99.9% of all of this shit is bad? Because it is. It absolutely is. What is so bad about admitting that? What is so scary about putting yourself on that cliffside? Like, okay, here we are. Here we are, where we're acknowledging that this shit sucks. That this is not a credit to the human race, to the very human experience. Something fundamental about storytelling is fucked up. It's not working. It's bland, it's pointless, it's rote, it's mechanical. Okay, so now what? And I don't necessarily have an answer. That is the quest. That is what we need to find out. What is next? If this is all not working, then what? Then what do we do? How do we move on from there? And that's the journey. That's the quest. That's what we got to figure out. But you can't go on the journey. You can't make progress on this quest if you can't even acknowledge the reality of how things are, of the situation that we are in. If you just spend your whole life pretending that all these TV shows... Whoa! Shit! Oh, fuck! I slipped, but I'm okay. Ew, kelp. Although I bet that probably helped cushion my fall a little. If you can't acknowledge, accept, or even recognize that we're in a bad spot, that movies are bad, that TV shows are bad, that this is all just a bunch of trash leading nowhere, then... Whoa. Then what? I mean, that's why I'm out here on these rocks right now and not at home watching TV, because I bailed out. I'm like, how many times is the big new show going to happen? And everyone's talking about it, and it's a piece of shit that goes nowhere, you know? How many fucking times is that okay? Basically, though, coming at things from the opinion that it is just blanketly not working, that on a pass-fail system, it's a hard fail, big-time fail as far as modern storytelling goes. I'm only on the very cusp of this journey of trying to figure out what that means and where to go next. But it's leading me back, taking me back to the past, where I'm reading a lot about tribal life and reading old legends and stuff. And trying to figure out what storytelling was for. Because obviously a big problem is that our modern world is just a complete bizarre mockery of what the human experience is supposed to be. That physiologically, we are designed for a life that is not even remotely close to the life that we're leading. And that seems to be very much reflected in our storytelling. If our whole lives are just based on being pacified and just being fucking cows in a pen, just watching the flickering lights that keep us sated, you know, if that's all storytelling is supposed to do, that is what it's doing, all right. But it really doesn't work on me. I'm not trying to act like, oh, I'm so cool, I'm the big rebel. It just honestly doesn't. Physiologically, it doesn't. I cannot sit there and watch. I mean, an episode of a TV show is tough to get through. There are movies where it's like I want to poke my fucking eyes out. Being trapped in a movie theater, unable to leave, just sitting there being subjected to this worthless fucking pablum. It's awful. These stories would not have passed muster back in the day. And it seems to be that storytelling back in the day, it had a much different purpose. Its purpose was to fire you up for the next day, to make you feel like you have a sense of mastery over an extremely terrifying world that you in fact have no mastery over whatsoever. Any given day you could be killed, any day you could die. But these stories help you feel like you won't. They make you feel like a warrior. And if you do die, you're gonna go to some great heaven in the sky. And it's all designed to help you in the world. So when you're sitting around that campfire, you're not as scared of that darkness out there. And I think that is what storytelling is for. That's what it has always been for, and that's still what it's for. And that's what I want. I want someone to recognize this world that I'm in, and I want them to contextualize it for me in a way that makes me more effective and more just happy to be here. And if a story doesn't do that, I don't know what it's for. I don't know. Because to just pass the time, to pacify, that is not fucking all right, man. That's such a perversion of the whole fucking notion. And it's just repugnant to me. It's repellent that people are okay with that. The people marathon shows. What are you fucking doing? What are you doing? It's your only life. It's your only life. What are you doing? You know, you need someone to say that. You need someone to shake you. You need someone to slap some fucking sense into you. What are you fucking doing? And you're never gonna wake the fuck up if you just act like everything is good enough. It's never gonna happen. And maybe it's not meant to. Maybe the human race wouldn't even function if more people were more self-directed and self-aware. Maybe for us to work as an organism, maybe we do need 99.9% of the people to just follow along. But that's not you. You're a fucking writer, my friend. Your job is to not be like that. Your job is to blaze a fucking trail. Your job is to fucking show people something, anything. It's up to you, but it has to be something. Otherwise, why are you here? What are you trying to do? Having beta readers and running all your stuff past other people and like this whole thing of like just trying to make a story that makes as many people happy as possible seems like such a recipe for blandness. I mean, I reserve the right to change my mind in the future when my fucking technique completely fails and I have to recalibrate everything. But for now, that's how I feel of like, it's like there's an old Joss Whedon quote where he said, he doesn't give people what they want. He gives them what they need. And I don't think it's coincidence that he is such a unique writer and that he... I mean, most Joss Whedon shows are just, you know, whatever dumb shit most of the time. But every once in a while, they hit in that big way that just no other shows do, that no other popular writer does. And it's because he's trying to express something, that idea that he's trying to give you what you need. You don't even know that you need it, but you do, because he's reaching into, I mean, like a classic example is that Buffy episode, The Body, about Buffy's mom dying. And that's obviously pulled from Joss's own mom dying. And that's what you gotta do, you know? You gotta find what gets you teary-eyed. Find the idea that means a lot to you. And that's what you've gotta present. Because you can't just give people what they want. It's just gonna be another, just, it might be, even if it's a good book, even if on the surface it's like, hey, what a fun book, I liked that book. But then it just evaporates and it means nothing. To me, the idea, what I'm trying to do here, is a story that doesn't evaporate, you know? Something that sticks with you because it came from a weird angle, it hit you with something you didn't expect, and you realize that it is something that's been lodged in you, some idea, some aspect of life that other people haven't been reaching and haven't been touching and haven't been addressing. And finally someone does, you know? That's the kind of stories that I like, and that's the kind of story I want to make. Which also ties in, I think, to the idea of how do you get ideas? It's like, well, what hurts you a lot? You know, what is it that you can't think about without feeling terrible? There's an idea, there's the idea, that's it. And along those lines, it made me think of this YouTube video I saw years ago. It's this lady named Jennifer Colari, who is a child psychologist, and she was talking about her early days, first kind of, you know, getting into that field, and she'd be at these houses for kids who were, you know, didn't have a home to go back to. So it's like the halfway house type place, and these kids are just like young to mid-teen. And how the prevailing wisdom was to not get too attached, because these kids were just on their way somewhere else, you know, they're just passing through, and if you're too soft to them, or if you're too nice to them, or if they get attached, that's just bad for everybody, and that's not the way to go. And this lady, Jennifer, did the opposite. She's like, that seems fucking really dumb, I'm not gonna do that. So she would read them stories at night and be nice to them. You know, it's so simple, but it's crazy how simple, like, I really feel like our society, it's so fucking backwards and so ridiculous and just, it's just garbage. It might be the best around, but it's fucking trash. And there's so much about it that's not even complicated. It's just so simple. And this story, it's just so simple, but so fucking heartbreaking. It's just like, the first time I heard this, I just started crying. I just couldn't not. And it's this 11-year-old girl who was, you know, really tough and really difficult and just a real handful to deal with. But Jennifer started, like, reading her stories at night and just tucking her in and being nice to her. And the day before this girl was set to leave and go off to, you know, wherever the next step was in this process of just being a displaced child, she held Jennifer's face between her hands and said, like, I just want to take a moment to look at you because I just want to remember this face. I want to remember the face of somebody who was nice to me. And that is like the saddest thing ever. You know, it's crazy how sad that is. And I was thinking back to that little clip because this story I'm writing now is not directly related to that. I'd forgotten all about it, but that idea had, you know, that idea and many like it have been in me for a long time of like, what is wrong with this place? And like, this is the shit that's important and we're just fucking it up and we're doing such a bad job. And ultimately, in the end of this novel I'm working on, the idea is calamitous failure of like this war orphan kid is basically going to get her hands on some power and it's going to go real, real bad. And the kind of surface, easy, sensationalist way to look at it would be like the, oh shit, this is like the origin of a bad guy. Can you believe this character was the bad guy the whole time? Which is becoming somewhat of a common trope. It's really not that unique of a thing anymore. And that's a surface level version of it. But really, the point of the story is the same as this little YouTube story I'm going to play, is when someone is in trouble and someone is having a hard time and there's no one there to offer support and to help when they all just want to shuffle you off to the next person and no one wants to take the time and no one wants to care about you. These people will find ways to cope and they will find ways to overcome their situation and they'll find ways to get through it, but it's not going to be a way that is good for anybody. It's not going to be what you want. It's not going to be what you like. When people are just ignored and denied, the coping mechanisms they come up with is the type of shit that tears everything down, you know? And that's what this story, that's what it's about. So here's the sad, sad YouTube tale, and that's it for today. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
So ladies and gentlemen, my friend Jennifer Kolari.
Thanks, Erica.
So the origin really is I did my undergraduate degree in psychology. I thought, okay, I want to do something real. I want to be with real kids and real families and real people. So I took a year and I went to work at a group home. So this is a group home actually for street kids. So they're 11 to 16 years old, if you can imagine, who had all been sexually abused, all been physically abused, deeply traumatized. And I'm hired to work at this group home. I have no idea what I'm doing. They knew it. They ran rings around me. They were so smart. I had no idea what I was doing with these kids, and really lost control of the whole situation. But what was interesting at night, when these tough, tough kids who were so scary and could be so prickly went to bed, they turned back into kids, right? So the jammies came on, the makeup came off, the teddy bears came out, and they turned into children. And the sort of philosophy at this group home was just put them to bed, that's it, don't get too attached to these kids. It makes no sense because they're not there for very long, so don't get them all attached to you because you're just going to leave or they're going to leave. None of that made sense to me. These were babies, these were kids. So I couldn't just close the door and say goodnight. I sat on their beds. I read them bedtime stories. I rubbed their backs. I sang them lullabies. And these tough, scary kids loved it. Absolutely loved it. They melted. And I melted doing this with them. It was really beautiful. And I noticed the next day when it was time for me to get those kids to do the things that I needed them to do, they were much more likely to do it for me. Now, this got the staff in a bit of a ruffle. Oh, she's being too nice. She's being too soft with them. They're going to walk all over her. She's a bleeding heart. This is ridiculous. But that actually wasn't what was happening. There was a connection. We had a relationship. And if you were here yesterday for Dr. Neufeld, he talked about kids will be good and want to be good for you when you give them your heart, when you're connected to them. And that's exactly what happened with these kids. So it really changed what happened for me. And there was one little girl there. She was really a particularly tough kid and loved the bedtime routine, absolutely loved the lullabies. And she was leaving the next day. And she put her hands on my cheeks and she said, I just want to remember this face, the face of someone who cares about me. And I never forgot that moment. That was a moment when I realized, okay, connection, compassion, empathy, these are powerful things. These change behavior. And I knew that very second I wanted to be a social worker. There was never a doubt in my mind after that. It was a very, very beautiful moment.
My head fits all.
Radio.